I'm Josh Carey.
And I'm Chef Tom Jackson.
And you're listening to Cooking with Fire.
This week, we're going to be smoking a cedar plank salmon fillet.
We're also going to expand on our last Q&A segment with some information on how to get the most out of your kettle-style charcoal grill.
This is Cooking with Fire, a global exploration of barbecue from KMUW.
As we stated last week, both Tom and I believe that the kettle-style charcoal grill is the best possible starter grill for several reasons. The best part about the grill style, though, is that it can be used to do just about anything, from smoking to baking to roasting and, of course, grilling.
With a few tweaks to your grill, namely how and where you place your charcoal fuel, you can create anything in a kettle grill. But most often, we get one question: how can I smoke food on my kettle grill without an expensive attachment? Well, that's a great question, and though we do like the different smoking and baking attachments that are sold for kettle grills, the simplest way to start smoking on one is what is known as the snake method. Visualize, if you can, a kettle grill with the main cooking grate removed. Around roughly two-thirds of the perimeter of the grill, we stack charcoal briquettes. We do this in a manner so that they will stay in place by running a row three deep around the bottom, and then follow with two more briquettes on top. For smoke flavor, all you need to do is add three or four fist-sized chunks of smoking wood to the top of the charcoal. This will allow you to get smoke through the first part of the cook when the food is able to take on the maximum amount of flavor. And what you end up with is something that snakes around the outside of the kettle, hence the name, and is ready to burn for long hours unattended. To light the snake, you simply light 8 to 12 briquettes in a charcoal chimney and place them at the front of your snake. These will burn down and catch the charcoal toward the front, and this will slowly burn down the snake over time. A traditional 22-inch kettle will burn for around 8 hours with a snake that wraps two-thirds of the way around the grill.
Another question we get is how to bake and roast foods on a kettle, and there are several ways to achieve this, but the simplest way is this. Light a charcoal chimney with your favorite charcoal, and while it is starting up, place a half-sized foil pan down on the center of the charcoal grate. Fill the pan half full with water, and once your chimney is ready, place half the coals on one long side of the foil pan, and the other half of the coals on the other side of the foil pan. This creates a good-sized indirect space in the middle of the grill, and you can control overall grill temperatures as you always do with the bottom vents, slowing down airflow to the coals to lower temperature. The water in the pan will help even the temperature in the unit and keep the food above it from scorching. If you are baking, we like to place a baking steel or corderite baking stone over the water pan to create a nice hot surface to bake on. For roasts, you can place them either directly on the grate or place them in an open roasting rack. You can find rib racks that double as roast racks all over the place these days.
Beyond these two setups, the kettle grill is quite simple. For grilling, simply light a charcoal chimney and either place the coals evenly over the entire surface of the charcoal grate for times when you're cooking items like bratwurst, hot dogs, and hamburgers, or place all the charcoal to one side to create a direct and indirect space for when you are cooking steaks, chops, or other pieces of meat that you want to finish indirect.
I hope you now see just how versatile a kettle-style grill can be, and if you have any questions about your kettle grill, feel free to shoot us an email at cookingwithfirepodcast@gmail.com. And now, to this week's topic, salmon. Salmon is one of those foods that just about everyone seems to love, even those who don't regularly eat fish or other seafood. It's versatile, and you can find it everywhere from sushi restaurants to steakhouses.
In fact, salmon has been a staple of the human diet for at least 25,000 years. A life-size carving of a salmon was found in a cave in southern France, and this carving dates back to roughly 23,000 BC.
Salmon plays a major role in the modern United States as well, along what is known as the Salmon Coast, which runs from Northern California through modern-day Oregon and Washington into parts of Canada. Dozens of native tribes built their lives around this amazing fish. There are several legends within Native American culture that revolve around salmon, most of which drive home the idea that the salmon are to be respected and never neglected as they fed their entire villages. Two such stories are the legend of the lost salmon, a story about a village that neglected the salmon by catching more than they needed and wasting it when caught, and Salmon Boy, a similar story of a boy who wasted salmon and subsequently drowned in the river only to become part of the salmon people himself. Both of these stories press into the reader the importance of taking care of your food supply and respecting what is available to us.
However, Americans are not generally known for respecting our food supplies, and salmon themselves have moved on and off the endangered species list for decades. In recent years, even with intense conservation efforts throughout the Pacific Northwest, the salmon population has continued to decline. Due to drought and warming rivers, salmon are dying in record numbers from disease. And as the climate in California, Oregon, and Washington continues to warm, the fish are moving further north to Canada, where they can continue to thrive.
There are a few positives, though, including that many groups are now fighting to secure a future for salmon in this region. And though they have their work cut out for them, it looks as if there is hope for the five major salmon species that live in the Pacific Northwest. There are many reasons to support these conservation efforts. The $3 billion salmon industry drives many economies in the region. The fish themselves are an incredible barometer of river health, so a thriving population tells us how the rest of a major ecosystem is doing. And beyond human consumption, many wildlife in the region rely on them for sustenance. If you are interested in supporting salmon conservation, check out the work of the Wild Salmon Center, who is working all over the globe to protect the salmon population. Their website is wildsalmoncenter.org, and you can learn of their campaigns and donate to the cause. And now is the perfect time to get into our recipe for cedar plank salmon. This fillet is a wild-caught fillet, so you'll notice in the pictures that it is a darker red and isn't quite as thick as a farm-raised fish, but man, is it tasty. So let's cut out to Chef Tom as he prepares our fish in the All Things Barbecue Teaching Kitchen.
All right, well, I'm outside on the patio outside of our teaching kitchen, and the very first thing I want to do today is take our cedar plank and get some char on it. See, the way we're cooking today is an indirect heat, so this plank isn't ever going to get really hot enough to put off any smoke. So we're going to go ahead and char it ahead of time so that we can still get some of that smokiness out of the wood and into the fish. And I'm just going to work with my torch from one end to the other, blackening this cedar. You know, if you want to, you can get your grill nice and hot and put this directly over the flame. Using a torch goes a little bit faster, though. All right, now that I got a nice char on our cedar plank, I'm gonna go back inside and prepare the salmon. All right, I have in front of me a 1.5-pound fillet of wild-caught sockeye salmon. I'm gonna go ahead and prepare this. I'm gonna start with a half of a lemon and just squeeze the juice all over that salmon just to cover the surface. And then I'm gonna hit it with some seasoning. Now, my seasoning I have today is a very simple salt, pepper, brown sugar mixture. And I'm just gonna cover the surface of the flesh with my seasoning. And then on top of that, I'm gonna put down one big sprig of rosemary that almost goes the entire length of the fillet. And then I have another lemon that I've sliced up. I'm gonna place these slices on top of the rosemary. Now let's take this outside and get it on our cedar plank. Now I'm just transferring our fillet to our cedar plank, and we're gonna go ahead and put this on our smoker. Our smoker is preheated to 275 degrees, so I'm gonna close the lid up, let this soak up some of that smoke, and we'll come check on it in about 45 minutes.
We are cooking this salmon today at smoking temperatures, but you can also kick the temperature up and cook it at higher roasting temperatures depending on the flavor profile you're looking to achieve.
Absolutely, and if you are cooking over high heat, you will want to soak your cedar plank in water for about 20 minutes before roasting to keep it from catching fire while everything cooks. And you'll need to keep an eye on it throughout the cook to make sure it remains intact.
Let's cut back to Chef Tom as we check on our salmon.
All right, here we are 45 minutes in. I've just come out to check the internal temperature of this salmon fillet. I don't want to mess with it too much. I want to let that magic happen inside the smoker. But it looks like we're at about 110 degrees. We need to get up around 140. So I'm just going to close the lid up and let it go for a little bit longer.
As always, we want to advocate for owning a good instant read digital thermometer here. It is the most important tool in an outdoor cook's arsenal beyond the grill itself.
They may seem like an expensive accessory with our preferred model running right at $100, but there's nothing that can make sure you nail your cook time after time like a good thermometer can.
Let's cut back to Chef Tom as the salmon finishes up.
Well, the salmon's been on for about 1.5 hours now. The internal temperature has reached 140 degrees, so we're gonna remove it from the grill, get rid of those lemon slices and the rosemary sprig, and this thing's ready to serve.
That does it for this episode. And remember, if you're looking to help with salmon conservation, to visit wildsalmoncenter.org to learn more about what they're doing.
And as always, visit kmuw.org to get the full recipe for this week's cook.
Let us know if you cook this recipe or any others we've featured on this podcast by emailing us at cookingwithfirepodcast@gmail.com. And if you enjoy the show, please head over to iTunes and leave us a review. This allows other people to be able to find the show and helps us reach more listeners. And join us next time when Chef Tom and I bake cheesecake on the grill.